Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray. And with us this week, a special guest star. You know him as the conquering champion from all things Canada. Jim Vessel joins us once again.
How's it going, everyone?
First of all, I heard some great news outside of the 40K network that your restaurant that you were talking about last time you were on opened to a very successful opening.
Yeah, we opened in December. That's kind of where I've been kind of secluded the last few months. So I haven't really been kind of in the 40K world. But yeah, opened in December. Was a lot of work, as restaurants are. And yeah, it's been doing really well. So happy to report. And now on to the next. I think I have two more restaurant openings this year. So
wow,
on to the next ones. I'm a busy guy.
Absolutely ambitious. Well, congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So we're going to talk about quite a bit. Obviously, the big news of the weekend was the end of the ITC season, and of course, the Las Vegas Open. So we've got wall-to-wall coverage. Quick shout out, Ray. I want to thank you for doing all the guy in the chair operations that you see in every superhero movie, making sure our Facebook page was updated all weekend long. So you did a great job with that. I appreciate that. So we'll talk a little bit, Jim and I will talk a little bit about our experiences at the tabletop. Ray can definitely talk about what it looked like from the outside going in. But the first thing was the big reveal of all kinds of new models. And I have to say, we were putting bets on what they reveal. We got none of them right.
What were the bets?
So right off the bat, Adeptus Mechanicus getting more new units. Who knew? And I'm not sure how I feel about Skitarii and Vanguard riding cyber beasts, but okay.
Robo horses. Yeah, they've it's been a really weird faction. If you look at like the Adeptus Mechanicus Skitarii, whatever it is, release schedule, it's been like this weird drip over the last, they probably had the faction with the most consistent regular releases. If you actually look at like the releases over the last few years, it feels like every like 2 or 3 months they get some small thing, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And meanwhile, there's like Necron players just grumbling into their Cheerios going like, can you throw me something more than a cryptic? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Because they even got they got a bunch of random characters in Kill Team that are apparently like, that are now like the best character in the Admech book is a Kill Team character.
Correct.
You know, yeah. And then they got the transports, which are really good. Then they got the plane, which I guess is coming out. And then now they got these little Batwing dudes and the Horsewing dudes. So
yeah, so I just didn't really think about, you know, when I think AdMech, what do they need to be competitive? Is they need a guy on horses? I was like, okay, maybe I need reread the book, but okay. But here we go. We got Vanguard and Skitarii Rangers on horseback. So interesting. And if that's not enough for you, they also have them with look like Leonardo da Vinci gliders, some sort of jump troop type thing.
Yeah, their legs are cool, but I'm not a huge fan, to be honest. I hate those flying stands, those weird curved ones. And the thing I liked about AdMech, well, traditionally from the background at least, if you read like, you know, Mechanicum or any of the Horace Harris novels or any of the other novels, like it's extremely grimdark. All the mechanical, like they've, you know, replaced all their limbs, and like this stuff seems a little too steampunk, I guess. Mm-hmm. For me, it feels a little too kind of cartoony steampunkish than like that really grimdark, like kind of ridiculous AdMech. I don't know, it feels like the design philosophy is shifting away from that kind of depraved, like if you look at the Dune Striders, and they got the dude with like his head is like basically part of the robot, and it's like just really like, mm-hmm, grim. These look a little bit too cartoonish for me. They look a lot more like something out of like AOS.
I would agree. I was a little disappointed by these. I felt the same way about the plane. I was like, I don't understand the bat wings, but yeah, one thing I really liked about the mechanic is the whole idea is we're priests with robes, but when you, it's kind of that Wizard of Oz thing where you open the robes and underneath it, you just nothing but cables and gears and stuff like that. I was like, that's there's almost no human left underneath all that. And that's
right.
And I think they've gone away from that. I don't know. Holding my breath for Dark Mechanicus, because I really like the idea of that and the demons coming together. But another time.
Yeah. And I think just from like, and I don't know, maybe this will not come off right, because it would be hard to articulate. Like, they've always seemed very like calm and calculating and precise. And seeing them in these like action kind of like hero poses where they're like jumping all over the place, swinging arms, like jumping on these horses, it just doesn't feel Admech. It feels very like cowboys and Indians. It doesn't have that like kind of like emotionless, kind of murderous like roboticism that like I imagined Admech. It has almost a little bit too much action to it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
No, I agree. They're more stoic than
like, I don't want them running. I want them marching, like, you know, on like staring forward and just killing things and not having any sort of flair. You know?
It's kind of that I they plant their staff in the sand and, you know, all will die before me type thing. And instead you've got this guy. The one rider there on the back to the horses, he looks like he could be a Dean Stealer cult guy with the double fisted pistols going. And I'm like, that's not
exactly.
I don't know. So the rules will be coming out in a Psychic Awakening book, probably two books away. It's called Engine War, and it will feature. So I believe that is Greater Good than Saga of the Beast, and then this will be next, if I remember that correctly. I could be wrong.
I said it says, so I guess Greater Good is next. And then now I don't know what's in there. There's rumor there's going to be Death Guard, but it's unclear. I know Tau and Gene Circult, but it says before Engine War, we're going to get, then they have the Gazgul preview. So I assume it'll be the Greater Good, then the Saga of the Beast, then Engine War.
Oh.
It could be from there's like a little video on the site here for the preview. So
and those of you who haven't seen it yet, Engine War will based on the symbols that they showed off should be Admech, Imperial Knights, Chaos Knights, and looks like Chaos Demons. If I get the right Chaos Star right.
Okay.
So. And that's pretty much all they revealed in terms of what's going to be in the book. So be curious from there. And then the big news, of course, Orc Player's been asking for this for months, and looks like we'll be getting Ghazghul Thraka back.
The parts you see in the preview look amazing.
So if you haven't seen this video yet, it's a lot like the Abaddon metal video that they did, where they do all these extreme close-ups of like an arm and a leg and a backpack and stuff like this. And they also did a nice cute little thing that they show Makari as his he's coming back and his sidekick is with him. I'm like, oh, wonder who could that be. But no one has seen what the full model looks like. And of course the big question is, how tall is he? Is he Gilliman size, bigger, smaller? So yeah, I would agree.
The existing Ghazghul is still fairly large. Like, if you compare him to, say, the new Abaddon, I'd say the existing Ghazghul is probably around the size of the new Abaddon. So I would hope that the new Ghazghul is bigger, like closer to Gilliman size, or even bigger than that. Like, even if like the orc part is a little bit more normal, like with his giant claws and his mega armor. I hope his mega armor is just like ridiculously over the top.
I'm hoping for bigger, to be honest with you. Like almost like
a Redemptor.
I'm thinking like almost either Riptide or what's the fantasy model? The Cyclops and Beastigore thing. Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, Cygor.
It would be, but it'd be pretty orc. Cool. Wouldn't hide anywhere, but you'd be pretty cool. So I know we're a 40K podcast, but it was hilarious how many people pointed this out, especially on the Trukari Facebook pages, that the new Pointy Elves came out, and they have one of their heroes. I think it's supposed to be actually Teclis, or any one of the legendary heroes. The Light of Atherion sees only one of the most legendary heroes of the ancient race return in a truly stunning new miniature. If you look closely, the armor is hollow. Anyway, everybody's like, oh, check out the new Archon. I was like, stop. So, yeah, and of course, so, I don't know, it could be cool. Yeah, Teclis looks ridiculous with the, I don't know what that thing is. It's like a hippogriff with a, yeah, that's weird. I don't know. But again, so if you're looking for a good conversion for a Archon, you might want to look at this. And then just when you thought, okay, more Age of Sigmar, more pyramids for the lizard, excuse me, Seraphon. And then some of the other stuff for Warcry. I'm like, okay, wake me up with something. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Black Fortress, they come up with Azote. I'm like,
Azote.
And like you said, I'm glad you brought it up earlier. Like, Kill Team has like an awesome character for AdMech. I had this terrible feeling that the Zote is going to be something like super overbroken. Everyone's going to have one.
Yeah, and it's actually quite, what's the word I'm looking for? It calls back to the original GW Zote. Like, if you actually look at it, it's very similar. It's got the same kind of gun, same kind of claw. It's got a lot of the elements of the old GW Zote, so. I'm not even sure quite what a Zote is. It looks just like a lizard man dude with four legs, basically. But
the original ones were more centaur. This one's a little more, like I said, more reptilian. And their whole, I guess the lore in the old days was the Zotes came over and says, and kind of convinced the people to give themselves to the Tyranids. You know, just put down your guns, it'll all be good. And then they get eaten. And they kind of went away, and now they're here. Back again, so I'm not sure what they will do in the Black Fortress, but holy cow, that's a pretty cool model.
It's super cool. It's definitely going to turn into some sort of chaos something at some point, I presume.
All kinds of parts ready to be taken care of. So those are the big reveals. So very interesting. The other thing, of course, we've been talking about for all along, another trailer for Angels of Death. That looked really cool. Still don't have, maybe I missed it. Do we know what platform this thing will ever be shown on? Is this, will it be shown?
I think I heard rumors, I don't know if it's true, that they're going to shop it around to some, either it's going to be like distributed by GW, or they're going to like work with like a Amazon, like, you know, Prime has video. There's like a lot of streaming services like Hulu. Like, not obvious, it's not going to show up on Netflix. Well, you never know. But I can imagine some of these smaller streaming services, like, there's so many of them now. I can imagine it popping up on one of those.
I would hope so. It looks really cool.
Because it's not going to be released, it's not going to be on, like, TV or anything. And maybe in the UK, I could see it, like, some, like, UK channel picking it up. But I would imagine it's going to be a digitally distributed web series almost, rather than, like, a something you'd see on TV. Although, if it was on TV, that would be amazing, because so many more people will probably watch it.
And if the last reveal, they showed download footage of Angels of Death, where they did the kids' shows based on the kid books, the Warhammer. Yeah. And I've been reading those with my son. They're actually not half bad books. They're actually a very interesting look at life as a ordinary citizen in the Imperium. And those cartoons look like easily like Saturday morning cartoon fodder. So I was like, wow, that would be really cool. And our fans in England are going to leap through the internet and strangle me for asking this, but isn't it all government run television?
No, they have the BBC, which is like a national channel. Like, we have the CBC in Canada, which is a Canadian broadcasting channel, and they have the British broadcasting channel. So they're nationalized channels. And usually the way it works is for content, like, I think something like 50% of the content or 50% of the content has to be made in Canada, but they do show regular shows. And then we just have regular, all the other channels as well. The BBC is just like its own channel. Okay. It's just like a separate channel. That's in Britain. But yeah, they have almost all the normal channels, especially if you have satellite or, I guess, do people have satellite TV anymore? It's good digital now. I don't know. I haven't had TV in like 100 years, so I don't know what the whole deal is these days, but I'm sure they'll be able to get it.
I know when I used to live in Europe, I used to live in Germany for a short while, and it was like, yeah, Channel 1 and Channel 2. And they're both government run, and programming started like at 3 in the afternoon, and they had kids programming, and they literally would do a bedtime story with the Sandman at 7 o'clock, and then tell you, all right, go to bed, kids, and then adult programming came on. And was wrapped up usually by, it really didn't matter. It wasn't like every night at 11. It was like, if we run late to 11:20, we're getting off the air at 11:20. If we're done a little early, we're done early. Good night. I was like, oh, this is weird. And then when I went back to visit, they've got cable TV and it's like 4,000 channels, just like America. I'm like, wow, this is weird.
For sure. One thing you didn't mention though is the Forge World books.
Oh yes, I did skip right over that.
And I think that's probably actually the thing that I'm most excited about, because I'm sure we'll get into it, but as we saw from LVO this year, the Forge World is still a bit of a sore spot as far as compounding some already broken rules. And I mean, there's a reason that the ETC has banned it for many, many years. So hopefully that changes with this stuff.
I hope so. I always have a tough time finding what's the current Forge World book.
Well, I think it's mostly just still the indexes, the four Imperial Armor indexes.
Okay, nothing new has come out. All right.
No, and that's been out. Those have been the same indexes since release. And then obviously now all the points are in chapter approved, the new chapter approved. Like they've merged the points values for 40K and Forge World, whereas before... I think I remember last chapter approved, they were like separate sections of the book, but now they're just all together, in one section. So I'm assuming now that hopefully the rules will be kind of brought up to the same level, 'cause there's a lot of like weirdness in there.
Okay. Yeah. I know one of my opponents during the weekend had a like 80% Forge World list, and I was like, what is this? Flipping through my tablet as fast as I could. Quick, where is it? So,
yeah, there's some things that are like I think it's a huge missed opportunity, because if you look at, like the Forge World models are, some of them are they're fantastic. Obviously, a lot of the units don't actually have like models, right. Which I think we'll see. So I think they'll go the way of Legends, just like they have with. Like all the new codexes, you know, the rule, the GW rule these days has been no model, no rules. So I'd imagine all those kind of random, weird characters that never got rules, that never got a model, will all go to the wayside. And then things like, I could even imagine things like Chaplain Dreads, which they don't make anymore, also becoming Legends essentially, in that new era. So, you know, that's a bit of a gray one, because they did actually make a model at one point, but they just stop selling it. So is it technically Legends? Is it not? You know, obviously there's a lot of drama around LVO. And then I think for the Space Marines, there's like a billion characters in their Forge World. And I think one of them has a model. Like there's at least like 25 characters or so. So I'd imagine a lot of that stuff is going to go away. And then hopefully they'll do a balancing pass, because, you know, if you look at you guys remember the first start of 8th, where they had the chicken, the Zinch chicken, who was like super cheap and just destroying everything. Mm-hmm. And then they just kind of, reactionary raised the points like triple to like 1500 points or something. And it made all those things unusable. And it kind of feels like they would never have done something like that if it was like a proper 40K main range. They would have like actually balanced it with like proper rules and like proper points. But instead, like Forge World's Band-Aid was like, oh, it's we don't want it to be a competitive option, so we'll just make it so many points that no one can use it. So I'm hoping what that means is that a lot of the Forge World stuff that like doesn't see play, sees play, and then some of the more abusive things get kind of toned down a bit. And that way it feels like we just have that many more options.
It'd be cool to see, because there are some really neat models that just don't see the light of day. And then, yeah, like I said, there's some models that just get bought for the abuse power. So,
yeah,
Be cool.
And I mean, like, GW isn't dumb. They have, like, they obviously have their sales data. They know exactly, like, look at the whole, what were those tanks for Custodes? What were those things called?
Yeah, what were they called?
Caladius Graph tanks, right? They know exactly, when they released the rules for those, they were able to see in real time exactly how the sales of that tank went through the roof, right? Same with the Orion Assault Dropship, right? They know that good rules sell models. And so if they're sitting on all this Forge World, that's literally like they could be making lots more money from it if they just give it better rules. You know what I mean? So it's in their best interest to be making good rules that are actually usable instead of having 98% of the Forge World model range completely unusable and then have only like 2% usable but super abusive, right? That's just such a bad place to be in.
Well put. So that's a be nice to see some of those changes. There's definitely a few Forge World models I'd like to get back on the table that were, you know, semi-usable, but they're banned. They are points prohibitive right now. So
absolutely.
One other bit of news, not related to Las Vegas, but very much related to competitive play, coming from the captains of the what used to be called the ETC. So the how to explain this best is the captains who ran the ETC teams have decided they've lost confidence in the actual governing body of the ETC to run the event, and they will run it themselves moving forward. So you'll still hear about
specifically.
Yeah, specifically for 40K. So you'll still hear about ETC championships, but and many people didn't notice, they actually run several events. So Flames of War, I believe there was I don't know if it was Age of Sigmar or this old school fantasy. I'm not sure what the other events were.
So I think they do a Ninth Age event, which is like the new kind of homebrew fantasy battles.
Yeah.
They also do AOS, and they also do, I think those are the big systems, and like X-Wing. I think there's a few smaller systems, but yeah, they definitely do Ninth Age and AOS. I think those are the other two bigger systems.
So those will, as far as we know at this point, no other announcements have been made, will continue to be under the ETC banner, but 40K will be run by I guess the group of captains will decide venue and the general logistics of how that event will be run moving forward. So very exciting news. Interesting departure. I don't have my finger quite on the pulse of the ETC. So was this a long time coming? Was this sort of, I don't know, but be curious to see what happens. So,
yeah, from my understanding, and this is talking to Chris, who's the captain of Team Canada. Obviously, I'm an applicant for the team, and so he kind of keeps us on the loop of what's been going on. Plus, I've been following the news pretty closely. From my understanding, the main cause and reason for this was the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, the ETC isn't one event, it's a series of events. You know, there's four or five main events, and then there's two or three smaller events. And because it moves every year to a different country, there's a bidding process, just like the Olympics. And it was kind of built under that. They're like, hey, we're going to build this like the Olympics, where, you know, countries bid on it, then they host it, and then they, you know, but what they're finding is that process of moving it comes at the expense of things like carrying over all your learnings from the previous year. So, you know, if you actually look at real life Olympics, what happens is you build all these arenas and stadiums, and then a year after the Olympics, they're all collecting dust and you spend hundreds of billions of dollars. So at a very small scale, the same thing was happening with the ETC, which was that countries would be spending thousands of dollars on terrain, thousands of dollars on mats. They'd go through this process, learn all this stuff, and then not do the ETC again. So all of a sudden, every year, it's like this very difficult, huge event with multiple systems. And what they're finding is that, you know, 40K has grown into such a big competitive sport that it has its own specific needs of, like, you know, what are the 40K, you know, you think about it, there's 30 40K teams times 8 players. So that's about a 250 player event plus judges plus whatever. That are flying from all over the world, Canada, US, I think Australia, mm-hmm. right? So yep. If they come there, and because of the fact that there's all these other events, like Flames of War, the 40K event is suffering, like the train isn't as good, or the venue isn't as good, or the food isn't as good, or the 40K event has now basically subsidized this event in a lot of ways, and they're having to kind of pay the costs, because instead of trying to make an event specifically tailored for 40K, they're having to kind of please everyone, all these different systems. What they were finding is that the event just wasn't living up to the expectations of the captains. And so I think by a 70% vote, they decided, instead of continuing kind of having this big Olympic style event with multiple things, they're going to branch off the 40K ETC into its own thing. And then ideally not have it move every year. So picking like a kind of a host country, and then it just stays there every year. Just like if you think of any other tournament, you know, imagine if the LVO moved cities every year, like how much of a nightmare that would be. Right.
Right.
So that's essentially what the ETC does. And, you know, that moving around and having new organizers, new people doing it was causing just a lot of issues. And it sounds like this was a long time coming. I don't necessarily agree or disagree. I think it'll lose a bit of the prestige of having that, you know, all those things under one banner. But if it means a better event for the players and the teams, you know, I don't think you can really fault them.
I agree. So some of the stuff has been a long time coming. And I know the last two were better, but I was just wondering if it was really good or was just good enough. It was hard to get that sense from anyone. So I get the impression that I got my answer now. It was better, but not, you know, it was good enough to get the games off.
Yeah, and I think the expectation, especially, you know, I think if you think about how the scene has grown, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I think in general, the expectation around events was actually fairly low. Like, if you think about the tournament scene, and like even think about terrain standards 5 years ago, you know, you could go to an event with like crap terrain, and that was, you know, people just expected that. But now it's like there's this kind of mob mentality around events. If they have poor terrain, like literally you will get, you know, trolled and thrown on the internet and kind of shamed on your event having bad terrain. So in general, the standards of from the players is much higher in the whole community. And I think, you know, the ETC needs to keep up with the times, so to speak. So
that's something I think they struggled with for a long time, too, is keeping up with the times. I mean, I remember one year the ETC was, I think the ETC still says no Forge World, right? No Forge World units.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one year they didn't even allow special characters. So it was like, holy, you know, what, you know, how old is this system at this point? So it probably needs some growth. And as for the terrain thing, yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. I'm a self-professed terrain snob, and I think we've been terrain for tournament organizers has been like credit card debt. You know, we racked up a big debt, and now the interest payments back in fifth edition, and now the game requires more terrain, so all of those interest payments are catching up with you. So yeah, plus you're
replacing. And I think to your point, though, in the defense of the Forge World choice, that is actually voted on every year by the captains, and it's voted down. So I think every year, you know, someone raises it like, hey, should we use Forge World this year? And the captains vote, and they usually vote it down. And I think that has more to do with GW's poor rules writing than any sort of like backwards thinking or kind of old thinking of the ETC organization as a whole. So I think the captains just don't want to deal with the nonsense, and I'm sure when we get into LVO coverage, we'll talk about it a bit.
Okay,
that's actually you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I apologize, then. I was misinformed, so that's good to know that it is voted on yearly by the captains. I apologize, then. So good to know. Thank you. All right, then. So, speaking of that, let's talk about that LVO. We're going to take a quick break, and then after the break, let's get into the discussion of this past weekend's mega event. Be back right after this.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, we're back after the break, and time to wrap up the 2019-2020 ITC season with the granddaddy of them all, the Las Vegas Open. So there's the good, there's the bad, and there's the ugly from this weekend. And let's get into the fun stuff. Jim, how would you rate your overall experience this past weekend?
At the LVO?
Yes.
You know, overall, well, look, the what I love about this hobby, and I was thinking about it today because I was, you know, I got home today from LVO, kind of reflecting on my season as a whole, thinking about, you know, how I felt. Obviously, spoiler alert, I came in second. you know, and I think what I realized about the LVO was that when I was there, like, it was the experience of just like being with friends, not just people that I know well, but like all the people that I've interacted with through online, through, you know, Facebook, podcasts, just the whole community being kind of in that one place, or a lot of the community, not everyone, obviously. You know, I got to meet some of the guys from Australia. You know, I got to hang out with Manny from the UK. I got to, you know, talk to, you know, Adam and Emma Camilleri from Australia and stuff. So there's just so many people there that on their own made it a great event for me. And it was really fun to be there with everyone, with the homies, as they say, you know, and just be in that environment with so many great people of the community. So I think regardless of how the actual tournament went, the 40K tournament, I had a great experience, overall, and obviously I'm excited. I lost a little too much money, gambling, but, that's the way it goes. And I'm definitely, you know, recovering from basically 2 days of nonstop, through all 3 days of nonstop drinking. But overall, had a great, great time.
One of the key things I would echo with that is, for once, it was no player drama this year. You know, there was a Nick Nottavati, Tony Crepando rematch coming up. And although they kind of shook hands and walked away from the table, for the most part, there wasn't any major drama from other players, which I thought was nice to see. Nice to see also, like I said, getting together with friends. I had a blast. I was joking with my wife the Thursday night. We went out for dinner. I can't remember laughing that hard in years. So it was awesome to be there. So it was really cool. We were talking about suitable terrain in the earlier segment. We were talking about ETC. Did you get a chance to play on any of the top 100 tables that had the new set terrain that ITC promised?
Yeah, I played, I think, half my games. I played four of my games on the top 100. So,
what were your thoughts on that terrain setup?
I think there could have been slightly more terrain. I think, there was two forests and two pieces of area terrain per table. I think if they had maybe replaced one of those forests, one of those kind of pairs with another small ruin, I think it would have been a bit better. On some of the deployment maps, besides the large L in the middle, there really wasn't that much places to hide. And especially given the nature of the hills, which are basically impassable, it really forces you into lanes. You know, it's not like, you know, if those hills, you can just kind of walk through, then it really opens up where you can go. But being the fact that they are impossible means that, you have to go around. So it really can be a bit of a hamper. So I would have liked one more, you know, ruin on each table as far as like quantity of terrain and type of terrain. I do think the idea that they were going for, which is having certain table layouts based on deployment, I think is a great idea, and I love it, and I really hope they continue it for next year. Because it always gives you a fighting chance. You're never going to be, you know, randomly assigned to a table where just through luck of the draw or through, you know, because, you know, if they don't have table maps and, you know, random, you know, FLG guy before the event is just setting up this table and he's not really thinking about, you know, all six terrain maps, you know, he might look at it and say, hey, this will work really well on, you know, three or four of the maps. But all of a sudden, you pull the map that means that your army is very exposed, and then there's not even a game there. The game has gotten so offensive. There's so much alpha strike. There's so much firepower, especially with the new Marines. There's so much damage that output, that if you don't have a good table like that, you know, you can lose the game before the first turn just based on deployment. And I really like the fact that this customizing the table deployment to the terrain to the deployment I think that's a great idea, and I think they should continue it. I just wish there's a little bit more terrain, and I also think the rollout was poor. Like, they should have figured that out. They should have told that to people in like October or December or like November, not like 3 days before list deadline. Like that was totally beyond like ridiculous. Especially given the fact that, you know, if you think about last LVO, what was all the drama? It was magic boxes, magic boxes, magic boxes. Everyone was thinking magic boxes. You get to LVO, lo and behold, there's like barely any magic boxes. There's no real magic boxes on the top tables. So everyone, like, you know, planned for these magic boxes and didn't get them. And then this year, there was no magic boxes on the top tables, no enclosed runes at all. So it's like, what happened? Like, what, you guys have completely done a 180, you know what I mean? So I changed my list when I saw that there wasn't any of those. So,
well, they're magic boxes. They disappeared. So that's why they're magic. I was in the same boat. I agree with you. Again, as a self-professed terrain snob, and while most competitive 40K players are working on new lists, I sit there and trying to figure out, I will find the ultimate layout for terrain that'll work with every deployment zone, every mission, and it's usually a fleeting cause. So the idea that they had set up terrain for each terrain map was like, well, that's brilliant. But again, doing it 48 hours before lists were due was less than brilliant. And I agree. It could have used two more pieces of terrain would have been nice. But the bigger thing is I definitely found myself, I took the wrong things out of my list. And I kind of went at pretty low expectations. I said, if I get one game on these tables, no big deal. I end up getting three. I had the wrong models. I actually took out models that would have thrived on that table. And I'm like, grumbling in my sleep. Oh, why did I do that? So that was unfortunate. But then again, as all the complaining I can do about that, I did have two games back on, like one of them was the deadly Necron tables.
Oh, no.
So then I was like, all right, be thankful what you had, because there you have two magic boxes, dead center, and a whole bunch of random obelisks that were like, what do they do? We counted them all as hills. It was like, okay, what? And that was, and then of course I was playing an Iron Hands player. I'm like, oh, this is going to be deadly. So careful what you wish for. So I was like, okay, we'll just let it ride.
Yeah. So I hope given what they've learned this year, they just include it for next year. And I hope they do something similar at the other bigger events like BAO, SoCal. I think they actually were talking about doing a team event instead of BAO this year, or around the same time instead. But I really hope that they kind of adopt that for their events moving forward. And then I think for other TOs, now obviously other TOs are not going to have the repetitive terrain sets like FLG has. So it's probably not going to be very realistic for any other events outside of the FLG sets. But I think it really would bring a cool twist to some of those bigger events. Obviously, with Nova, Nova's kind of already doing it.
Well, here's a quick shameless plug for our event, March 21st and 22nd, Scorched Earth Open. I put in an order. So basically, I took the terrain that they got at the Atlanta Open. And I have 28 tables worth of that terrain coming to me that I will customize. So at least structurally and functionally, it will all be consistent, but then hopefully it'll beautify it to make a little nicer looking than what you saw on stream. So see if that will be a new trend, and that's what I'm probably going to experiment with, something similar to what we saw on those top 100 tables that you set it up based on deployment map. So yeah, should be a fun experience. Other thing I thought was really cool is although they're a rival podcast, I don't think we're all really rivals. We all kind of get along in the brotherhood of content producers. Val Heffelfinger and Peter the Falcon were running around with doing interviews live on the scene. So I don't know, Jim, being the bigger celebrity of the group tonight, I don't know if they chased you down.
No, I'm old news, so you know I'm not cool these days. But I definitely thought it was really cool. I know they had a drone at one point, flying around with a drone cam, and then they were able to stream some of the other kind of more interesting games outside of the GW stream. And obviously Adam and Adam Camilleri from Down Under, and Paul Murphy from the Forged Narrative, I think. I think that's Forged Narrative. Did The Color, and those guys are stand-up guys, great commentary. So it was really cool to touch base with those guys and watch their coverage as well. So
pretty cool stuff. It's cool to see them zipping around. Ray, watching it from afar, was it something enjoyable, or was it kind of trying to look through a mail slot?
Well, I was able to watch some of it over Twitch, and it was kind of enjoyable, actually, especially because it wasn't just Space Marines every single round. It's kind of hard. I mean, when there is 1,000 players, you just watch one game, it doesn't really show much. And of course, trying to follow along with everything going on with Best Coast pairings got hard, especially after about halfway through round two, trying to keep track of, you know, who's put their scores in, what place are people in. Especially when you look at the placings and you watch it switch back and forth between like two completely different lists.
Right.
But it's one of those things where the more channels definitely helped. Okay. You know, because they had two, three different channels basically trying to keep track of what was going on.
That's cool to hear. I was really hoping they would tap into whatever that technology that Pro Tabletop had, where they had like round by round scoring as opposed to waiting for the game to finish to find out what the score was. But because that was not a possibility, but that was pretty cool. So let's get into sorry, go ahead.
We're about to talk about it. So yeah. I presume the bad.
So the bad, very awkward situation. And I know a lot of people are like, well, this happens every year at LVO, that everybody logs in at the start of round one, they crash the server. This, I'm not much of a computer guy, but the few guys on my team are, this seemed to be much bigger than a server crash or server lag. Long story short, between round two and round three, there was a bit of a delay. Jim,
it was between round one and round two. There was a 2-hour delay, and then round two and three. So there's 2 2-hour delays, basically. So we didn't start game three till like 8:30 at night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually forgot about the delay between round one and two. Thanks for reminding me. Block that out. Yeah. PTSD from the event. The good news is people were fairly civil. I loved whenever they made an announcement, 40K players. It was like dead quiet. If you ever see what 1,000 people being silent looks like, it was absolutely eerie. Because normally you couldn't hear yourself think a lot of times, but that was kind of nice because you could like come around, you know, be a little camaraderie and talk to people you haven't seen in a while and blah, blah, blah. But we didn't get done with day one. And my game, at least my game three, didn't end till 11:30. And
yeah, it was bad.
And what made it worse, it wasn't like, because people were like, why did you just go get something to eat while you're gone? Because they didn't let us know. It was one of those things where it'll be 10 more minutes. It'll be 10 more minutes. And like by the 100th time, they told us it'll be 10 more minutes. It was like, okay, is this the one? And it was really one of those, once they get it started, there was going to be no wiggle room. We're starting now. And so you kind of sat there. It was worse than like waiting for an airplane to start, you know, like your flight's been delayed.
Yeah, it was, look, BCP has done some great things for the scene. They've contributed a lot to the community in the sense of, how they've been able to kind of help tournament organizers, help events, that kind of stuff. Like, obviously, it's been a big part of some of the growth in the community, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, BCP is a product, right? So it's a product that some of us pay for. I have a subscription. I'm sure there's lots of people out there that have a subscription. They bring an income in. It's an app here that if they're gonna, you know, they obviously sponsor certain events. You know, there is a financial element to this whole thing, not just for VCP, but also I feel really bad for Reese and Frontline, because, you know, this is going to potentially negatively impact their financial of their event. Like if 10% of the people that went through that this year decide not to return because until, you know, Frontline switches off BCP, that's a negative financial hit to BCP. Plus it there's a lot of reverberating effects due to those delays. Now, if you're going to tell me that there's no way they could have anticipated this, well, I'll say because as you said, it happens every year. And it blows my mind that at this point, they haven't figured out a way to have BCP scale the way that it should with more people, or have it set up so that on these larger events, they can lock everyone out. So no outside eyes can essentially, like, I don't know what the issue is, the technical issue. If it had to do with, say, 3,000 or 4,000 people outside of, you know, the event trying to log into that event to see the scores, if that was the cause, then they need to have a way to prevent people from even looking at it unless you're at the event, and then export the results to like a website. And people want to follow the scores, they can go check, you know, www.pcpscores.com, and it's going to have, you know, all the scores there. And that's where people can go outside of the event. But if you're at the event, you can only get it on the app. So if that's the issue, if it's an issue about some other bug or some other scaling, well, they need to do better bug testing, better stress testing, better, better testing of their app for these large events. Because right now, it's embarrassing, and it's not right that 3 years in a row they would have these issues. Well, if it was the first time this happened, hey, you know what? This was the first time we ever saw something like this. We didn't think it would break. I get you. If it's the second time, sure. But the third time here is pretty ridiculous. And the fact that the judges had to literally hand pair 800 people for games is just mental to me. And, you know, BCP really needs to either prove that this app can work for next year, or Frontline should find another app. Now, I don't know if there another such app exists. I know a lot of people were calling for things like Down Under Pairings or tabletop.to, which is what the Europeans use for a lot of their events, but there has to be a better way, because this can't happen a fourth year in a row.
I really don't have anything else to add. The only thing I could speculate was it sabotage? Did somebody plant a virus? It's the only thing I could think of.
Is Adam from Down Under? Because they sent him to,
yeah, exactly.
He's got some faults, plugged in a faulty hardware.
Or is it the guys from Torrent of Fire who are just bitter? I don't know. Because the only reason why I say that is in the previous years when the server failed, when you logged into BCP, you just got the spinning circle, you know, waiting for a response, right. This time, even on Sunday when things were working, and I'm using air quotes on the radio, which is very professional, you'd be looking at BCP and then all of a sudden it would flicker, kind of like, you know, when the Matrix reloads or like Max right. Headroom. And every now and then you're like, oh, who's in first place? Oh, looks like Sean Nate. Nope, it's Trent Northington with 9 wins after 5 rounds. How did that happen? And then it would flicker again, and then there'd be some weird characters, and then the scores would come back. And I'm like, okay, is this accurate? Is this not accurate? So that tells me this was something more than just a server issue. But again, I'm not a computer expert. But it was bad. It was bad. Now, you mentioned the financial aspect for Frontline, but also, I mean, I'm sure Bally's has got something to say about this, because there were several, one thing some of our friends found out early, because some of them were off to a bad start, and when this happened, they said, the heck with it. I'm in Vegas, I'm going to have a good time and not waste my time with this nonsense. This weekend wasn't something, a lot of those events weren't something you could get, like, tickets on the fly. So other people had reservations they'd made months in advance. They just went up in smoke. Mm-hmm. So that all went away. And I noticed there was if you had your badge on, your wristband from LVO, you got 15% off if you got any meals in the casino. Where all that money went, who knows? But I can tell you that the little food court at the bottom at 11:30 was packed. And they actually ran out of food. They were swamped because everybody was like, what's open?
Right.
So that was a big issue. I'm sure Games Workshop was embarrassed, you know, because they're, we'll be right back, you know, our ongoing coverage of the event that's not happening. So overall, not a good look. And it's a big setback. So, ugh.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an issue. And I think, you know, I think Reese kept his cool and, the you know, obviously thank the judges for doing their best, but definitely unacceptable moving forward. And I know a lot of people, like, I obviously just drank in those 2 hours in between each game, so I was fine. I was very lucky that my third round opponent was too drunk by the start of the third round that he came up to the table and actually said, "I'm too drunk to play, so I'm going to concede." And I said, "Okay." And so he went drinking. So that actually worked out for me. I didn't have to actually sit there and play a game till midnight. I can't imagine how some of the other people must have felt playing till like midnight.
Well, let me tell you about my little experience. So round three, I'm not at all where I think I should have been at this point. I'm already 2-0. I'm like, holy cow, this is happening. And I meet this mountain of a man named Matt. He's on the Australian ETC team. And I'm going like, all right, first true test. I'm like, okay, what Iron Hands list does he have today? No, he's playing your old list, Jim. He had Plague Bearers and Aramon and Demon Princes. And I'm like, okay, what happened here? I am not prepared to play this list. My list is completely designed for magic boxes and Iron Hands and Space Marines. What is this on the table? And I mean, there were some of the mistakes I made were comical. He had like the super large objective markers, so you don't have to measure 3 inches mm-hmm. to the poker chip. At one point, yeah. I was trying to measure, am I within 3 inches of the pad? And he looks at me like, are you serious? I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's late. And then he was, because he was out of town, he was expected to go out that night, and he had a friend with him, and they're being good sport about hanging out. But man, they were starving. Are we going to go? And then the icing on the cake, the light right above us started to malfunction. So when neon lights or halogen lights start to malfunction, they strobe. So now we're trying to play the game, and it's in like a discotheque. And as this thing keeps strobing, both of us were like, okay, I can't even see the dice. What does that say? Is that a 2 or a 5? I can't even tell at this point. So it was just like, okay, let's just get this game over with. Needless to say, I lost. And it was so frustrating because we were both had such a miserable, and I saw each other the next morning. I was just like, did you finally get something to eat? And he says, yeah. I says, how's your head doing after that light? And he's like, it was bad. I said, it's because it took easily a good 10 minutes for my eyes to normalize from that experience. So
yeah,
it was terrible. And so Matt, if you're listening, I'm terribly sorry. And I hope we can play again some other time. It was a very embarrassing experience, but anyway, I kind of alluded to our next little topic, the ugly. We saw it when the list came out. Goonhammer, my new favorite website right now, is...
Yeah, they've been doing some great content, I'd say.
Yeah, and they were there, and I couldn't find them. So if you're listening, guys, you got to call me. They broke down percentages of each faction, and 31% of the field at LVO was a Space Marine of some sort, and we're talking about strictly the new codex that excluded Dark Angels, Blood Angels, and Space Wolves. Even Richard Siegler, who played Tau all year, flipped to Space Marines for the last gasp. I was like, are you kidding me? What is going on here? So, again, I totally list-tailored my list to go up against Space Marines. And it benefited me. Jim, what were your thoughts on the meta at this tournament?
I don't think anyone is shocked and appalled at what happened. I don't think anyone was surprised. We knew it was going to be Space Marine meta. We knew it was going to be an Iron Hands and Imperial Fists meta with Raven Guard. Those are the books that have really risen to the top of the Marines, and you know, that's what we got. I think at the end of the day, that's kind of where we're at. Shout out to the other non-Astartes players that made it to the top, you know, top 20, top 30 with non-marine lists. I think at the end of the day, like, you know, GW, I hope this is a bit of a wake up call, in the sense that there needs to be something done. Now, whether they're going to do something post LVO, I doubt. I'd imagine we're not going to see anything till, let me say this. I'll be surprised if we see anything before, Adepticon or the April FAQ, because that's usually when they kind of take in those changes. I know a lot of people are saying like, oh, like just wait for Psychic Awakening. But look, we've had at this point non-Astartes, we've had Tyranids, we've had Chaos Space Marines, we've had Eldar, we've had Dark Eldar, we've had Harlequins, and none of them have brought them even close to Marine levels. And on top of that, the Marines are getting better faster than other books are getting better, because look at the LVO winning lists, the Brohammer lists. They all taking advantage of the 5+ Feel No Pain aura from the Faith and Fury. So they got the better, and then a lot of other lists like Manny's list taking advantage of the Tech Marine from that book. So even though the other books got better, Marines also just got a ton better. And guess what? Just got better. Awesome, crazy rules. Grey Knights. So there goes all the Chaos Demon builds. Dark Angels. Next we got, like, you know, Space Wolves will be out soon. So the rate at which the other books are getting better is getting outpaced by how Marines are still getting new stuff and they're still getting new rules. And now all the Marine factions are going to be really good instead of just some of them. And so I just don't see a fix for it unless GW steps in and does something a bit more heavy-handed and not just waiting for the meta to kind of like settle, right?
Right.
The problem especially being, and this is kind of how I tried to explain it to people, is like, look, if you actually look at what are the top meta lists for Eldar, for Orcs, for Chaos. So Chaos right now, the top meta list is Possessed Bomb. For Eldar, it's, you know, Heavy Flyers, Night Spinners, Shining Spears. You know, there's kind of one, maybe two builds. There's a flyer build, and then there's kind of like the heavy artillery tank build. So lots of vehicles is one build, and then you have the kind of fast build. Don't at me and say, oh, like Sean Naden's build. Look, Sean Naden is a savant. Like he plays lists that no one ever plays, and no one knows what he does. Like he is like, if he played Marines, he'd be like winning everything. And then the Orc build right now is like 300 Orcs, right? So you have three builds basically that can compete, and then the Tau build is the one Riptide build. So each of these, either kind of bigger factions, has one strong build. If you look at Marines, they got the Iron Hands build, the Raven Guard build, the Imperial Fist build, the White Scars build. The like there's literally multiple ways. There's the Flyer build. Like there's multiple lists that are all major winning lists, and so you can't tech against it because you're like, well, if I tech against Centurions, I die to the Intercessors. If I tech against the vehicles, I die to the Centurions. Like there's just so many, you know. And then you lose to everything else because you're like, oh, if I tech against Marines, I lose to Orcs. Whereas Marines can basically just do whatever they want, and it's just good against everything. So that's really the big problem right now, is that there's so many. They're not just better, but they're just better everywhere in all areas. And that means that it's really hard to build a take all comers list as a non-Marine player that can actually win events.
That was really well put, because I don't think people realize the functionality that in the game of rock, paper, scissors, the Space Marines have all the pieces. And mm-hmm. like in that, you hit it right on the head, where if I even just going against a different Space Marine lists, if I countered this list, I will be vulnerable to the other list. And it just felt like everywhere you turn, they all had them. And I get it, it's only a third of the field, but you know, in a 6-game tournament, it means you're going to be playing them at least twice. So you have to have an answer for it. I don't know about you, Jim. I played them 4 times. I was like, holy crap.
I had 3 Marine games out of 6. And then, yeah, three. Maybe 4. I can't remember. It was a long weekend.
Yeah.
But the other thing too is, and I was thinking about this today, is that it's not just that they, like, if you think about any of the Eldar factions, or like and I'll use Chaos as an example because it's something that I'm salty about, obviously. So, you know, I played against Liss. You know, he can fight twice. He can fight twice with anything in his army for 3 CP. For Chaos to have any, for Chaos to fight twice with something, it has to be Khorne and it has to be infantry. So for this, the Marines get an ability that anything in their army can do for 3 CP. For Chaos to have that same ability, I have to specialize into a specific type of unit and a specific mark of unit. So that automatically like limits my options when using that stratagem, right? So, and then that same kind of mentality, apply that across all the things. So Chaos has one faction that gets an extra Warlord trait, Alpha Legion, but for any other build, if you can't have multiple Warlord traits. Marines, every single book can have 3 Warlord traits in each list. 4 if you count the Field Commander. So they're just better. They just do everything that the other books do, but better and more of it. You know what I mean? So, and it's more universal. So there's less specialization. And that lack of specialization means they're just better. They're better against everything.
Yeah. I don't know what we were talking about that on the ride home, you know, what can GW do to fix it? And, you know, you mentioned something heavy handed. The only thing I could really think of is get rid of the reroll all to hits as opposed to going back to reroll misses. I felt like they made that rule change because the original rule was maybe too complicated to follow, and it's come back. And now you can see people just rerolling everything to get those extra sixes, especially when they're playing Imperial Fists. It's just, you know, what's the point of minus one to hit anymore if you've got Chapter Masters providing rerolls everywhere? I was like, oh, this has gone way down the rabbit hole all of a sudden. So,
yeah. And like, if you think about, just that Chapter Master, that's a great example. So that's a new ability. It's not like they went back and FAQ'd all the other reroll failed hits or gave other books that. Marines exclusively have that and Call has that. But, you know, like, there's similar things. So just stuff like that is, I think a fix that they could do that I think is actually would make sense is having the doctrines switch over. So you start the game in heavy and then turn to your army automatically goes to tactical and then automatically goes to assault and then maybe stays in assault for the rest of the game. Unless you pay maybe 3 CP to stay one extra turn. There just needs to be a price for the doctrines. Because right now they amplify the power levels of the armies, the supplements especially. If you just think about vanilla books, like the vanilla Marine book, it's actually not bad. Just vanilla book Marines. It's the additional doctrine stacking and stratagem stacking and Warlord trait stacking from the supplements that really put it over the top. So I think that there's a way to force them to automatically switch doctrines, or just get rid of like the AP at all. And all they have is the like chapter doctrine trait. Like, so get rid of the extra AP, have the trait just tied to, you know, like, so Iron Hands would just get reroll ones and move and shoot. They wouldn't get like AP 4, Imperial Fist, you know what I mean? Right. So, you know, that could be a thing, like just something like that. I think it needs to be drastic like that, where they actually change how the doctrines work. Cause I think that's what really pushes it over the edge. And then obviously there's some edge cases, like some of the Forge Rolled Iron Hands stratagem abuses, which, you know, Richard and John and the Brohammer guys navigated to top 8 finishes, which, again, taking nothing away from them, they found the most effective combo and used it. And that's what good players do, right? So it's not taking anything away from them. Obviously, even with that, they still had an incredibly tough, incredibly difficult pathway there. No, you know, there's no easy games, but I definitely feel like it needs looking at. So
I just thought it was ironic that the finals, you know, the winner came down to a dreadnought need to be killed, and they played the stratagem, well, he takes half damage, and then left it being, you know, came up short, didn't kill the dreadnought, losing 27-26. That determined the championship. I was like, wow, what could be more fitting of how this meta turned out?
Right. And just to give people an example of how broken that is, so it's a combination of 2 stratagems and a relic. So between Cogitated Martyrdom basically gives the ability to pass off wounds on a 2+, and then the half damage combined to Ironstone means that damage 3 becomes damage 1, and Like you need basically damage 6 to do anything to do damage 2. Like if you have a damage, think about it. If you have a damage 6 weapon, you do 2 damage, right? So anything less than damage 4 does 1 damage, which is insane. And being able to pass off the wounds and the iron stone, that kind of combo, I think Brad Chester did something like 65 wounds to the Leviathan and it took 6 wounds.
Yep.
After all the stacking of the saves, like it was something meant like that. And I read a, I think it was on Reddit or something. Someone actually did the math on how many las cannon shots it would take to kill a Leviathan dreadnought, with those stacks. And it was something like 150 las cannon shots based on average rolls, like the probability of rolling average. It was something like 160 las cannon shots to kill a Leviathan dread. With all the buff stacking as is, because of just the way the math kind of rolls out.
One thing I thought was interesting, you know, as a possible countermeasure for that, I noticed that Harlequin, there's a couple Harlequin players that crept into the 5-1-1 bubble there. And you look at their list, right. You know, Outriders filled with Skyweavers with Haywire Blasters. I was like, okay, between that and the top table terrain, you got what you needed. But it seems so hyper-focused. Then, like you said, if they go up against anything, you know, against the Intercessor list, they're toast. You know, that those things don't have you know, the close combat that they need to really take those things out.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you make that gamble, so say you send your 12 Skyweavers against that Leviathan, and you fail, and you don't kill it, just remember, it's Iron Hand, so it doesn't bracket till it's on bottom bracket. And with Pharaohs, he heals 3 wounds automatically, so it essentially is never bracketed. All of a sudden, all your bikes are dead. So you lose all your bikes to potentially kill it, and then between the Stalker bolt rifles of the last cannons, and you know all your bikes are going to die. So it's a huge gamble to like go for that kind of the jugular there on the Leviathan and hope to kill it.
Right. So anyway, that was sort of the feel of the event. Pretty much all day 2, everyone was talking about Iron Hands and Space Marine meta. And I think you hit it on the head earlier. Adepticon is right around the corner. You know, our event is the weekend before Adepticon. Will we see a change from Games Workshop beforehand? We'll be surprised if it happens. But that, in the meantime, brace for impact. This isn't going away anytime soon, which could bring a very ominous start to the 2020-2021 ITC season.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, I was saying this after, you know, these guys, you know, the guys from Brohammer did an excellent job, and huge congratulations to them to all their success this year. You know, I talked to John regularly, I talked to Richard regularly. They put a lot of work in for that list. But now that they've done the work, expect to see that list everywhere, right? And expect to see people, you know, not playing it obviously to their success because they're not that caliber of player. But if you're playing in a GT or a major in a regionally, you're going to be seeing that list as of like next week. And if they don't do something, we're going to be seeing that list throughout the whole season. Like think about Alex Harrison's 9 flyer list that made it to the second place. No one was playing 9 flyers before we that list showed up at LVO last year. And what did we see right after LVO? We saw for 6, 7, 8 months, these flyer lists were like this menace on the scene, right? People were playing copycats everywhere. So expect to see that Marine list showing up everywhere. More Chaplain Dreads, more Leviathan. So, you know, hopefully, and my one small spark of hope, I don't know if it'll happen, is that GW has not yet released a FAQ errata for Chapter Approved. I know there are some things that need an errata, things like the Gene Seer cult. There's some old Space Wolf stuff that is mispointed. So there's a lot of mispointing of stuff. I would really hope now that they've seen the LVO that they do release alongside any errata for Chapter Approved, that they release like an a point amendum update kind of, you know, band-aid, because if they stick to their guns and don't adjust points till say next Chapter Approved or you know, the some other thing, it could be really damaging to the game.
Well put. So let's take a break on that note. We will come back. We'll go over the ITC standings for the last time this season. and start looking towards next season with next week's upcoming events. We'll be back right after this. Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. Welcome back after the break. Let's go over those end of season, the final standings for the ITC 2019-2020 season. You're in 10th place. Nick Donovati, who only played day one at LVO. Not sure what other reasons for dropping out were, but nonetheless, he still finished the season in 10th place with 1,030 points. 9th place, Brian Poulin, who also suffered an early loss at LVO. 8th place, TJ Lanigan. 7th place, Banny Chima. 6th place, Stephen Pamprin, who, by the way, all the Orc players are really salty on him for switching to Marines. That's all I heard about. All dried up. 5th place, Brad Chester. 4th place, Nicholas Rose. 3rd place, John Lennon. 2nd place, our special guest, Jim Vessel, and with 1,100.
Yeah. Richard wasn't available, by the way.
We're actually super proud to have you here, Jim. We look at this and we go, man, he had the lead all season. Not an easy feat to win that many events. I think at one point you had rattled off 27 out of 28 wins in 28 games. Nothing to be ashamed of. A fantastic season. There are people that wish they had a week like yours. You had all summer to bathe in that glory. So fantastic job. And I think it goes to show you how much more competitive the ITC has become in a very short amount of time.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, I'm extremely happy and proud of Richard and what he's done this year. Him and John have been, you know, kind of it's been awesome playing with them early in the year and seeing them kind of grow as players and kind of get better and better and better. And, you know, I don't think it could have happened to a nicer guy than Richard, and I'm extremely happy for him. And I have nothing to be ashamed of. I think I proved myself enough, and I'm extremely proud. I was able to do it, winning the hobby track, ITC hobby track, and maintaining, you know, excellent hobby scores and kind of being that balanced player. It means a lot more to them.
And nothing to be overlooked. I mean, some heavy competition. I know some of the previous winners of the hobby track as well are, you know, they pour all their time into that. So put your time into a decent army and then also be able to be a master of it on the tabletop. It's a huge renaissance. And again, you mentioned you're fairly, last time you were here, fairly new to competitive scene. So,
yeah, I think, I used to play competitive fantasy, but this is like the first full year that I've been competing. Last year, I kind of started getting into it around August, September. Like, that was when I started really like going to events and stuff. What I will say, though, is like, because of my commitment to hobby and painting, I am always a little bit behind the meta in that sense. And I did start painting Marines to get to that point so I could run them for LVO. In and around when the book released, I have a Soul Drinkers army that's in progress. But I had to spend almost all my time painting. And so by the time I got it finished, it was January and I hadn't played many games with it. And on top of that, the list that I had started painting initially in October had changed so many times and the meta was shifting with Faith and Fury and all this stuff that I couldn't both get the practice I wanted and paint the army to the standard I wanted in time for LVO. It was either going to be one or the other. And I just wasn't willing to make that sacrifice. So I decided to stick with Chaos. And because of that, because I'd spent all my time in, you know, October, November, December working and painting Marines, I also didn't get much practice with my Chaos.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was kind of a double whammy. But at the end of the day, I'm happy with I'm happy with my choice, and you know, I'm glad I stuck with Chaos, because I really enjoy playing the faction, and you know, it meant no matter how I did it, LVO.
So what's the plan for next season? Sticking with Chaos.
I got to finish this Marine army, because I accumulated a lot of Marine stuff over the last 2 or 3 months, and I have actually 2,000 points painted of Soul Drinkers. It is not the meta list, so I don't know if I'm staring right now on my desk about 12 Centurions or so. So hopefully, and a Chaplain Dreadnought, some Victor War suits, and then a bunch of boxes that I don't want to look at. And then I have a few Chaos bits and bobs to paint. I think for now, what I'm going to do is just trying to finish off some of these half-starter projects. I have the Canhammer team tournament coming up, which I'm going to be playing Chaos. And then depending on what happens with the ETC team and playing for Team Canada, I might have to continue to play Chaos until to kind of get that practice. Adepticon is my next kind of big event. And I'm still deciding what I want to play for that. I think I want to play my Marines, because I've never actually played them in like a tournament before. And no one's really seen them outside of my Instagram. So I'm kind of excited to hit a table with them. So, you know, and try something new, but that'll just come down to whether or not I'm gonna be able to get some practice in before Adepticon, which I should, because my life's a little bit less hectic, for the next few months than it was in December. So.
We mentioned Team Canhammer. So team championship final standings here. Canhammer actually coming in 8th place. Team Zero Comp coming in 7th. Godhammer Gaming 6th. Glasshammer coming in 5th. Beast Coast coming 4th. Team Battle Brothers coming in 3rd. 2nd place Gentleman Gaming. And no surprise here, 1st place Brohammer taking home the team title in that regard. So also great showing in that regard. So we look forward to your exploits at Adepticon. We will be following you closely. I want to thank you again for being on the show this week. And again, congratulations to a fantastic season.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah, I appreciate it. And always welcome to come on.
So as we mentioned, our event coming up in March, hopefully the first major of the new ITC season. We kind of position ourselves to be like the Daytona 500. Get yourself started. If you've already got a painted army for ITC, you can come on down to us here in Phoenix. So we'll be hearing much more updates as we get closer to that event here on the Exterminatus podcast. Also additional updates as we get some more of these Psychic Awakenings books coming out. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.